Power on.
Ask Drone You.
Hello, everybody. This is Rob.
And I'm Paul, and you're listening to another episode of Ask Drone You.
Welcome, everyone, to episode number 83. As always, we are so glad that you're with us. And today's a special day, Paul.
Today is a special day. We actually have a special guest with us today. Justin Woodcock of the Raptor Cam and also IR Distro is with us to talk a little bit about his trip to Nepal.
Sounds intense. Sounds emotional.
Yeah.
Tiring. Paul's told me a little bit about this, Justin, so we're going to learn more. So,
Justin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, definitely. So you just got back from Nepal. Tell us about your trip. I mean, it seems like a lot of people are seeing this disaster, especially after the second wave of the earthquake. So a lot of people are saying, you know, I've got a drone. I want to go out there. So tell us about your experience. Who did you go with and how was it?
And let me just add, I really want to know why you went. Sort of preface things like the reason you were there in the first place.
Okay, well, I was contacted by a company called Halo Drop. Halo Drop, they're an elite group of drone operators, as well as they're a company that will assign drone operators with certain situations. They'll give people the best operators for that scenario for certain disasters or whatever it may be. So Halo Drop, I was contacted by them. We were supposed to be going out to Nepal to work under the UN and OCHA with a group called Team Rubicon. And we were going to be doing 3D mapping and structural inspections and stuff. What we would do is fly around different buildings and infrastructures like hospitals or police stations and stuff like that. The company is amazing. Overnight, they would create a 3D rendering model that they would send back to the UN, and the UN then would assess the damages and then allocate the resources needed for each building and send out the money and whatever need to be to get that place up and running again.
So you guys would fly then different areas of the city, and then you would provide that data to your group, which it's really important, I guess, that you, if you are an operator, you go out with a group, that you go out with a company, say, that actually has the authority to be there and actually has the connections, like you said, with the UN. This seems like a big deal because, you know, we talked earlier, so many guys are going out there and they're just acquiring footage for the news.
True, and that was a big problem that we had while we were down there. We had a run-in with the local Nepalese police, and they did seize my equipment while we were there. And the problem is they're going through a lot of heartache right now. I mean, there are still thousands of people that are missing. We went through villages that were buried under 50 feet of rock from landslides, and the whole village gone, and no one's left. So they're having a lot of problems, plus a lot of their very spiritual places, temples and stuff like that, are completely obliterated. And you have a lot of people that are going out there, and they're getting amazing footage with their drones, don't get me wrong, but at the end of the day, the country doesn't need that right now. Right. They need more support and help versus, you know, getting the footage out there and kind of making a name for yourself.
So
and that's what they're having a problem with.
So you were out there to go map. You were out there to go do some search and rescue. I mean, tell us more. I mean, it seems like an interesting experience. You know, you say that your equipment was seized by the police. So if someone goes out there and they don't have the actual accreditation or the authority.
Or the credentials to be there, yeah.
Yeah, that they could get in a lot of trouble because you got your stuff back, right?
Yeah, I did. So I did luckily just get my stuff back yesterday morning. The next day, handed it to me. And that's the thing is if you're going out to these countries, you need to be out there with an organization that's already established and that's doing work out there because they have paperwork. They're connected with the government. They know what's going on. For your average person that just shows up and you don't have paperwork, you're going to experience what we did, and it was basically detainment. They arrest you, and they try to figure it out. And the problem is when you're in a third world country, a lot of these groups don't talk. The government doesn't talk with the police and stuff like that, you know. So it's a very, like, fine line that you're walking. And so if you go out there, you want to make sure that you have everything ready beforehand, That way you don't have a run-in when you're out there, because it's not a pleasant experience.
Well, and even for a country, third world or not, that has processes in place for this kind of thing, with something like this that's happened with the earthquakes, it's all thrown off. I mean, nothing is as you would expect it to be.
Exactly. And the thing is there are no drone laws in Nepal, we found out. Later on, their FAA down there said that we broke no laws and that we were there to help. But at the end of the week, we ended up flying and working with the Nepalese drone department, the main headquarters. They actually have a drone department.
Wow.
They're still learning how to use the drones, and that's what we were there to help show them how to do it and what we do best. And so we spent the days going out there searching an 8-kilometer landslide that wiped out multiple villages and identifying and making it a search and recovery missions and stuff.
Wow, that seems like a heavy task.
It seems huge. And to get into a little bit more about what your equipment list looked like, what did you use? What did you have out there with you?
So we actually we went out there with a Phantom 2 with a GoPro, and that was easily enough done for mapping, believe it or not.
Boom! Awesome. Another Phantom user.
That's amazing. It's cool to see Phantom used for something like this.
They're small. The backpack made it really accessible, which was nice, because some of these areas that you're going, you're not carrying the S900, which we had, and we also had an Inspired, and there was some other stuff out there. But at the end of the day, like for the mapping and the 3D rendering and the structures, we used the Phantom, and it worked wonders. For the other stuff, the Inspired and the S900, we had the GH4 shooting 4K as well as the 4K on the Inspired. And then we also had thermal, the IR Distro thermal running. All are great tools for what we were doing out there. They all have different uses. The beauty with the thermal is, even after you have an accident, there's a point when the body will, the temperatures will neutralize out and you'll look somewhat like the rocks. But then shortly after that, when the body decomposes, it produces gases and the body does start to warm up again. So you can start to see stuff. And then, I mean, it gets more in depth. You have stuff like solar hours, solar flares and all that stuff between certain sunrise and sunset that you want to work with. And I mean, the tools are great. Drones, without the drones, we wouldn't have done as much work as we could have, because some of these villages, you couldn't go back more than 100 yards before the place were like, this is a zone that we can't let anyone go because it's deadly. So we sent the drones out, line of sight, I mean, as far as we could take them, you know, and then we also did some autonomous stuff as well, and basically take it deep and come back with the images, send them out to the guys, and within hours have a full map rendering of the valleys and everything for the police department to look at.
That's amazing.
It is.
It really is. It just goes to show, too, how there's such a limited amount of time that you have to do search and rescue with a thermal camera because of body temperature or whatnot. And this is something that Jim Bowers from Swarm was talking about. He goes, you know, the sad part about search and rescue is that it's normally too late when the police ask for drone help to actually get a drone out there in time and able to find the person before it's too late.
Yep. And especially like in situations like we were in, we're staying in Kathmandu, which is gigantic. Like you're living on top of each other and stuff. But where we are going to these remote villages, we'd be in one area and the road would go for 10 kilometers and you'll have hundreds of villages that range anywhere from 50 people to 500 people, and they branch off miles off this main road. So realistically, a week later, we still had villages that were 8 miles up coming to us saying, why aren't you guys here? How come no one's been there to help us yet? And it's like, you can only do so much and you're working your way up. I mean, drones, we can spot villages, just take it straight up. Like as high as you can, and then spin around, and you can see villages in the distance, and just go straight to the village.
The truth is, it could take months to really get all the data that you need to.
They're already planning on at least a few more months of work. Like I might be going back. We have another group that's out there, and also if people think they're qualified, you can go to halodrop.com, fill out some information, and what they do is they sift through, and if you're a qualified pilot, they'll put you on lists, and they'll send you out to these areas during times of need and stuff. And so they just sent another group out. since I came back, and they're doing the same work, and they're just going to continue doing it until they're basically called in. Right.
So that's Halo Drop. So what do you think those qualifications would be? And does, I know with some groups, they kind of cover your cost of travel and whatnot, and others don't because of the amount of time that you have. You have to get out there right away. You just got to have the funding. So for people who are interested in doing this, what would you tell them is like kind of standard operating procedure for Halo Drop? What are qualifications?
So first off, I want to say three things about Halo Drop. Halo Drop, they're creating a marketplace that'll match up customers' needs to drone teams with the best trained certified teams, specifically to do like critical infrastructures and life critical instances. The Very second cool. thing they do is they provide automated drone systems. They also do like the 3D mapping and 3D rendering and stuff. And then they also provide special drone service systems and training government large government companies and large organizations and stuff like that. So they do a lot of stuff with the military and government already. Okay. And what they do, basically, let's say, for instance, you, I know you fly a lot, Paul, and I know you're qualified to do what I did out there by no problem at all. It's easy. But you would then go on and apply. You'd want to state your credentials and stuff like that. They'll review it, and when a certain job comes, they'll know what you're qualified for, and they'll send you out to the job that you're best qualified at.
Gotcha.
They're not going to put you in a situation that you're not going to be able to handle yourself in. Secondly, with this trip, they were contacted by Team Rubicon. So Team Rubicon actually covered all of our expenses. Halo Drop basically offered all the services of the drone, the drones and the drone operators and the mapping and stuff.
So
like that.
Were you connected to Team Rubicon or were you connected to Halo Drop?
I was both. So I was actually contracted by, or I was asked to come fly by Halo Drop, and I'm actually now going to be a full-time Halo Drop member. So whenever stuff goes on, I'm going to be working with them and going out to the scene.
Cool.
Full-time. As well, and then Team Rubicon, since they actually contacted Halo Drop and they said, hey, we need you guys, we need your drone pilots, and we need your guys' mapping skills, because the mapping literally done in hours, if not overnight, is time sensitive, and that's crucial, you know. And they said, we need that mainly, and the drones. Get out here. So we then we apply to be Team Rubicon members, because it's a nonprofit organization, and then we went out on their behalf and their expense.
That is awesome. That is truly awesome. So help us understand, one of the questions I have, and I think one of the questions our listeners will have, is help us understand, you know, the workflow when you would go out there. Would they tell you, you know, yo, Justin, I want you to map this area? And from what I know, the Phantom is normally limited to like 150 by 150 meters at a time. Is that right?
Are you talking about a grid area?
Yeah, a mapping area. Uh-huh.
So actually, when I was flying the Phantom, I know that there's the vision and all that other stuff. We were actually flying manual the whole time.
Oh.
So what I did is I would just take it up about 100 meters, 300 feet, and I'd fly just a perfect grid, just like you'd see them do it in the autonomous program, and fly a grid. Send the images to these guys. 3 hours later, they'd have a 3D model and everything stitched up, and it looked like you were in Google Earth. It was the craziest
thing. So you just sent them the images, and do you know what software they were using at all?
That I don't know. They might describe it on their website, but yeah, it's these guys. I mean, they're good at what they do, and they're all ex-military or current military too. Like, that's what they do for a living.
Wow.
So this is all images, not video.
Correct.
This is all pictures, images, and they make it into like a 3D Google Earth style thing.
So it's like photogrammetry, essentially. Right. So you weren't taking any video out there really at all. I know you said you were using the Inspire and whatnot.
I did. The Inspire, we actually set up for doing photos as well, but I did get some video. They're working right now with how it's going to be distributed, because they want to make sure that stuff that does do get distributed, it's... they want to make sure that they don't cross that. It's very sensitive with what gets out there. Right. We don't want to release too much with like the temples out of the respect for the religions and stuff, because some of these temples have been. And I mean, they're just a pile of rubble. It's the craziest thing.
Justin, this sounds like a super intense, mission. You're out there. I mean, where did you stay? I mean, how did it feel the whole time? Were you in kind of like survivor mode?
And what did you do for power?
Yeah, that's a great question.
How did you keep your batteries powered?
Yeah, so we actually had generators. A lot of the stuff we did was around the local city. When we did go out of town, we'd make sure we came back before nighttime, just because when it gets dark, you're in a third world country, it can be scary, you know. And one thing that like we did experience is going to a village. You see, you're there treating them, you know, you have medics, and most of, like, Team Rubicon is mainly all doctors and medics. They're out there to mainly treat people. So we're out there helping, and the villagers that you see that come up from 3-4 villages up, you know, are miles away, and they're sitting there saying, why aren't you helping us? It goes quickly from, you know, wanting help to, like, needing help and then demanding help, and then it's turns into survival. So you're getting people that are fighting for their lives, and they see you helping these other people, but they don't understand why you're not all the way up there yet. So people can quickly change, and you see moods swing real quick because survival mode, no food, no water, no shelter, you know, and they see you handing it off here. So it can be really scary, and you got to just make sure every night that you're in at least a safe area.
What did you do in that circumstance? I mean, if there were other people coming up asking for help, what did you guys...
And you'd see one person come, and he would start talking, and he'd explain a story, and then he starts getting really intense and really upset. Then the other people would start coming. And luckily, with Team Rubicon, they have people that are from all over the world that work with them. There was people from the UK. There was people from Nepal. So that day, we actually had Nepal Team Rubicon guys with us, and that day we were also with the Nepalese police. But the police happened to be talking to the military, because out there, I mean, third world country, you don't go into their area without talking to them first. And we had to make sure that the major, the military base, was okay with us even being out there taking pictures. But yeah, it was, that's the thing, is you just got to make sure that you're with someone that knows what they're doing. So, otherwise, you're going to be in some serious
trouble. Again, it just goes to show that you need to be with the right organization. Yeah. But just like here in the United States, when you want permission from air traffic control to fly near an airport, you got to take kind of that mentality and really run with it. But with everyone out there, it seems like, because you're working with the FAA equivalent, you're working with the military, the bases, the local police. I mean, it really goes to show, Rob, how important it is to be with an agency.
Absolutely. I can only imagine. So the desperation that you're speaking to in these people, it's, number one, it's heartbreaking, but it creates a volatility that you've got to really be aware of. And so were you escorted by police or not necessarily?
Not normally, except for that one trip. We ended up, we're having a police escort because after I had my equipment seized and we started working with the main headquarters drone department, they were basically like, okay, we're going to take you to these locations and you show us what you guys do, you know? And then they were like, we're going to get your equipment back. You know, we just need your help right now while we work on dealing with the other police department. So they took us to these specific locations and they told us what our specific objective was and what we needed to do, which we were looking for a specific buried vehicle under rock.
Okay.
And you're looking for any kind of, and this is, we're talking like far away, hundreds of yards, if not like over 1,000 yards away. And we're inspecting for it, which they ended up finding the vehicle and everything inside, which that's what they were trying to recover. But yeah, it's definitely a troubling time when you go out there and you see the faces of these people, because it's just total destruction. And we had landslides going behind us while we were out there too. I mean, it was just unstable.
Were there aftershocks? Did you experience any of that?
There were. And what I learned later on going out there is earthquakes aren't the big thing. It's the tremors and the aftershocks, which are what kill you.
Yeah.
So the earthquakes will go and they shake the buildings really loose. And then the little tremors afterwards make everything just crumble down and stuff. And yeah, you'd be driving down the road, and there was a few buildings that we saw just crumble right in front of us on the road, you know. And while we're on a dirt trail, doing a search and recovery mission with the police department, a landslide goes behind us and you hear it, and, you know, and it's just, it puts you in your place and you realize that you're really in the middle of the center of danger. You know, your life is there.
Very real, but somewhat surreal.
It is. And I mean, I wouldn't change anything. And I wouldn't steer people away from wanting to go donate. Cause this was all donation, you know, like I didn't try to charge anything, because to me it's what I could do to show how drones can better the world, as well as life-saving tech, what you can do to save lives and stuff like that. And so I would recommend everyone, it's a lifetime, or it's an experience of a lifetime. It's a book that I would never be able to rewrite. And I would definitely do it again, because it was something that I'll never be able to forget. It was definitely a life-changing experience.
So it was life-changing in your mind.
Literally life-changing and extremely humbling.
Would you say that it provides perspective on what you have, or what we have here in the United States?
It's unreal. Just to be able to drink water. You know, I'm fortunate to come from Lake Tahoe, where we have some of the best water that comes out of the tap. And we wouldn't even touch LA water with a 10-foot pole. And the first thing I did when I got off was give me a gallon of LA water, because it was amazing. Just to be able to drink from the tap and be able to shower and not worry about it, you know? Yeah.
Things we take for granted every day, unfortunately. Yeah.
The little things, you know?
Right.
Wow. So did Team Rubicon and Halo Drop take care of you guys while you're out there? Do they provide housing, food?
They did. Anything that we needed, like, we were planning at one point to need sleeping bags, because when we started going out there, we heard that structures were falling down and buildings were going down, and we might just be camping because it would keep us safe away from all the buildings.
Right.
And so when I went out there, I didn't have any of that, and I purchased it all, and everything's being reimbursed. So basically anything that I spent while I was out there was 100% reimbursed, as long as it was for the cause, which was awesome. All the food, everything.
Gotcha. Wow.
So did you, getting back a little bit to the actual activities out there, were you able to help find some folks?
What I will say is we, and out of respect for the families and stuff that were over there, you quickly shift from search and rescue to search and recovery.
Okay.
And, We had our missions to go out there and look for the vehicle and stuff, and we did find the vehicle. The vehicle was found later on through the imaging, and as well as they identified possible remains of other people, I'll say. And at that point, they would send in recovery groups to go collect.
Yeah. Wow.
See, it just goes to it goes to show, like, there's such a limited window of time.
Yeah,
there is.
Life is precious.
Versatility, I mean, we were using multi-rotors, but honestly, and you have different tools for your environment. And knowing what we are doing out there, I'm going to eventually get a wing drone in the next probably few weeks. I'm going to work with another guy who's a pretty known builder. His name's Curtis Youngblood.
I know him.
Yep, exactly. and so, I mean, we're talking wings that'll fly between like 3 to 5 hours.
Yeah.
And then at that point, we can throw thermal on them and fly valleys for miles, you know?
Yeah.
And it'll be amazing to have whatever tool we want at that time.
So speaking of like long range stuff, did you have any issues with your radios at all? Did you have any issues with interference at any time? I mean, we've flown together, and I know you have a different remote for your S900 that you use for your Phantom as well. The Futaba, the 14SG, right? Yeah. So did you have any issues at all with radio frequencies, or when you had tremors, or, I mean, any difficulties at all while you're out there?
I had no problems at all. I didn't have any problems actually with transporting my lipos, just throwing it out there. didn't have any problems, which was nice. But
I'm sure you had them in lipo bags and
or something.
Yeah.
So anyways, on to the next topic.
You were just trying to get out there.
Our mission was to go out there and save lives and get money to the right resources and buildings to get those places up and running, so we can get like people treated faster. But with that being said, with the radios, I didn't have any problems with anything, doing any kind of calibrations, and I was getting amazing range. Mm. I mean, I had that S900 out there pretty far.
Nice. How do you know about how far by chance? Or do you care not to say? You're not in America, so it's like you can't really get in trouble for it.
Okay, I had it out there probably over a half mile.
Nice. So like
three quarters of a mile out.
So like 1,500 meters or so?
Yeah, maybe 1,500 to 1,800.
Wow. Wow. That's crazy. The farthest I've ever gotten the Phantom to go is 2,600, but that was again in the middle of nowhere.
Well, the one thing that was limited me is I was in a valley, so I had trees and stuff like that, and I had perfect vision, and then it fade away into a tree, and I'm like, okay. And then I had to shift it over and try to find it again, you know. But if it was like an open area with blue skies, oh yeah, I could have taken it a lot farther, no problem.
Wow. Wow. That seems like such an amazing experience.
It does, yeah. You know?
And
to be able to go and help in this way is very cool.
I have to say, huge shout out to you, Justin. Huge shout out to IRDistro for providing that thermal to you. You know, it's just, again, it's just such a phenomenal technology. And you are like the proof in the pudding that drones are for good. And you hear so many people talk about that, but they don't do anything. They don't actually do anything to help or showcase that drones are good. And here you are, you're doing it. I mean, you are, you're living life. So are there any like tips or tricks, any nuances that you've learned from this experience, things that maybe you would have done differently or lessons you had learned?
Well, first off, I also want to thank, Go Professional Cases, because they did give me, they overnighted me a S900 case last minute, so I had it right before my flight because I needed an extra case, and they definitely took care of me and free of charge, and I just want to say thanks to them because that was amazing. As well as also for people like tips and stuff like that, I would try to work with your local search and rescue groups. I do that out here in Reno. I work with the Washoe County. I'm getting in with them. And I actually do a lot of stuff with the Reno Fire Department. They have a thermal infrared drone of mine. Well, it's actually theirs, but we hired Distro and I built it. And they have a few Phantoms that they practice on. And so
what kind of drone did you use or did you build for them for the thermal?
They have an S900 platform, and reason being is just because it's the size. You can compact it pretty well in that box with a lot of batteries. And with the thermal, I mean, you're getting 30-minute flight times. So with the payload and the weight of our camera, power-to-weight ratio, you get really good flight times out of it.
One of the questions I have is what gimbal were you using to isolate the IR640? That the thermal camera.
So the one that we had out there was just a generic two-axis Terran gimbal, and that was because it was really a last-minute thing. I got called the day before, and I didn't have anything set up and ready.
Yeah.
And I had a buddy that had had one of our thermal setups ready to go because he does power line inspections. Edge Technologies out of Reno. So cool. Edge Technologies gave me. His whole setup to take out there and do all the thermal work.
That is so cool.
I think you bring up a great point, Justin, and that is you're working with local search and rescue to go out and to do what you did in Nepal without having done some of that work. And prior to doing that, that would be asking a lot of yourself. People need to have some experience locally, probably.
Definitely. You're going to need to learn like chain of command and how like stuff's done. Cause when you show up, it's not just, okay, go do this. There's agendas and there's certain things that have to be done and certain structures that have to be captured a certain way. So, and for instance, if you're doing like body recovery or something like that, you're going to want to know how to fly more manually than GPS if you're doing certain terrains and situations like that, you know. So it's good to get with your local search and rescue groups because donate your time because they'll use you. And as long as they feel comfortable with the FAA, they'll use you as much as you possibly can give up your time.
Yes.
And it's great experience, and you're also helping out with your locals and saving lives.
Right.
That's awesome. Justin, is there anything else you want to go over? I don't know what else to say because it's just so awesome. Really, like, highly look up to you, man. Like, it's really awesome.
Thanks.
I'll probably be signing up for a Halo Drop myself, and
Definitely. We definitely want to be involved with that, and certainly appreciate you taking the time to share your experiences.
Yeah, no problem. Very cool. And if everyone wants to check out Team Rubicon as well, anyone that's medics or anything like that, they'll take the help as well. But specifically for our drone guys, get at Halo Drop. They're doing big things. They're going to basically revolutionize the drone industry with linking people up. It's going to be an amazing thing.
Very cool. Very cool. Also, I know I've heard of Youngblood by the way before in the drones. There's a lot of good fixed wing aircraft that you can fly on the existing batteries you have. FYI, highly would recommend the Pixhawk flight controller for that. I don't know what he uses. Would highly recommend that. And we're actually. We're going to be teaching a class here next week, and I already talked to Joel about it, but we're going to be teaching a class about how to build a gimbal specifically for a dual cam setup. So if you had a GoPro and you had the IR camera, how much would that gimbal cost? What's the total package? How can you put it together for industrial inspections to really give our students, you know, an idea of, hey, this is how this needs to work. So I think that's really important. One of the questions, actually the last question I have for you, the drone that you were given from, is it Edge? Technologies?
Yes.
Edge Tech.
It was his gimbal setup, actually.
It was his gimbal setup. Was that drone Faraday protected?
What do you mean by Faraday protected?
Like, was the ESCs and the motors isolated via like?
All that stuff. We actually just ran it on the S900. So his gimbal setup was set up for the S900. Rail system.
Gotcha.
Oh, cool. He has dual monitors, and then he also has dual DVRs that records the FPV and the thermal at the same time, and he has the cameras stacked. So we have matching images, and then we can overlay them in thermal and FPV.
That is so awesome. That's on board the vehicle, right? The DVRs?
That is, yeah. There are these two little silver boxes you can get, generic ones in Hong Kong or China. And they're fairly cheap, anywhere from $20 to $60. The better, or the more you spend, the better the quality of the resolution you can store. So they store just on little SD cards, pop them out, and then you have footage right there. It's just like pulling them out of the GH4.
That is so awesome. How does that record? What format does that record in?
I don't recall.
Like .mov?
I just transferred it. But
gotcha.
It's probably like MP4 or something.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very easy. Justin, thank you so much for your time. We greatly appreciate it. And this has really been eye-opening, Rob.
It has been. And it's just awesome to see the drone community coming behind this kind of need, really, and helping out the way you did.
Definitely goes to show, Justin, that there are guys like you that are out there that, again, are doing this for good, but have the heart to really take time away from their job and go spend time doing this. So highly applaud you, man.
Yep.
Thank you, man. And I'd like to see more people out there giving back and showing how drones are better.
Definitely.
Well, this interview will go a long ways in doing that, I think. So thanks again.
Yeah, thank you so much. Take care, Justin. That's going to do it today for our episode, guys. If you want to hear more from Justin, check out theraptorcam.com.
Yep.
And you can find out more about Justin and what he does. If you'd like to find out more about IR Distro, make sure to check them out. I believe they have an Instagram account. They're on Facebook. It's IR Distro, IR-Distro.com, Justin?
IRDistro.com.
So it is IRDistro.com. They make phenomenal thermal cameras. We're actually doing a few tests with them this coming week on a wind farm. We're doing power line inspection and a gas pipeline inspection and a roof inspection to show you guys what you can do with the industrial aspects of that camera and that system.
Yep.
And, you know, Justin's a perfect example of, you know, the search and rescue aspect of it and what you can do for good with that equipment.
The more altruistic and more important use of all of these things.
And don't forget agriculture.
That's true. Yeah, agriculture is It is a huge one. Yeah. So, guys, if you want to learn more about them, check out Justin. Check out GoPro Cases. Special thank you to them. I want to say, I know Julia over there. She is an awesome, awesome person. And it's just so cool to see companies really stepping out of their corporate world and, you know, kind of going on the human side of things. And how can we really make a difference?
Yeah, absolutely. So, no doubt.
Guys, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. But that's going to do it for us today. My name is Paul.
And I'm Rob.
And this is Ask Drone You.
Ask Drone You. Ask Drone You. Ask Drone You.